Hello, this is Anil Kumar from Back to the Bible radio broadcast. During the program today, we continue our series, Life Lessons from David, the man who would be the king, by looking at what happens to David as he flees from the hands of Saul. This message is called Hanging On When Everything Crumbles. So let's listen now as we turn to our text in 1 Samuel chapter 21 to 23.
I'd like to quote from a poem that I've known for many years. The author is unknown, and here's what it says. When God wants to drill a man and thrill a man and skill a man, when God wants to mold a man to play the noblest part, when he yearns with all his heart to create so great and bold a man that all the world should be amazed, watch his methods, watch his ways, how he ruthlessly perfects what he royally elects, how he hammers and hurts him, and with mighty blows converts him into trial shapes of clay, which only God understands, while his tortured heart is crying and he lifts beseeching hands, how he bends but never breaks when his good he undertakes, how he uses whom he chooses, and with every purpose fuses him, with mighty acts induces him to try his splendor out. God knows what he's about. You know, some of us have wondered why it is that those who are used by God in mighty ways are so often deeply wounded, so much so that their wounds play an integral part in who they are. I think the answer is the same reason why Jacob, on the night before he was to encounter his brother Esau, not knowing whether Esau was coming to bless him or to kill him, spent the night before that encounter wrestling with a heavenly being who put out the socket of Jacob's hip so that Jacob went limping, unable to escape as he was about to face the greatest crisis of his life, wounded by God. See, that's how it was with David. Before God would put him into a palace and proclaim him king and shepherd over Israel, God would expose David's weaknesses and bring him to the place where he would learn to rely on God. The worst thing that can happen is to have a leader who does not know how to trust God in moments of crisis, and therefore God brings leaders and those who influence others into moments of chaos. This is deliberate. The first test David faced was the test with Goliath. There he passes with flying colors as he exercises a faith not seen by anyone else in Israel. But as matters went along, things got a bit complicated. Already on four, perhaps even five occasions, King Saul had tried to kill him, and now David is running for his life. And as we will see, this was arranged by the hand of God. And as we will also see, David didn't necessarily pass all these tests of faith with flying colors. Unlike what David said earlier, "The Lord delivered me from the paw of the lion and the bear. He delivered me from the Philistine giant, and whoever rises up against me now, God will deliver me here as well." Well, that would have been nice. Instead, that old David seems to be leaving, and in his place is a David who seems less than certain. Let's follow these five incidences in which David's weaknesses are exposed and in which we will slowly see a kind of faith developing in him that will prepare him for his throne. And as we do, let's also notice the forces in our lives in which God is preparing us for lives of significance. The first incident is a failure to see a crisis in terms of God's providence. David has left Samuel at Ramah and left Jonathan with a covenant of friendship, and for the first time in his life, he's running for his life. We read about these events in 1 Samuel 21. Let's read verses 1 to 3. Then David came to Nob to Ahimelech the priest, and Ahimelech came to meet David trembling and said to him, "Why are you alone and no one with you?" And David said to Ahimelech the priest, "The king has charged me with a matter and said to me, 'Let no one know anything about the matter about which I send you and with which I have charged you. I have made an appointment with the young men for such and such a place. Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread or whatever is here.'" Now, Nob was a city located on the top of Mount Scopus. Today, this is within the municipal boundaries of the city of Jerusalem and offers one of the best views of the city. But in David's time, it was just outside of Jerusalem. It was a small settlement then, and it housed one of the shrines of the priests. David needs to stop here because he knows the priest in charge, a man named Ahimelech. It's possible that Ahimelech heard of something of what happened at Ramah, in which the prophets of the Lord were endangered by Saul, and he wants to know why David is alone. Is there a fallout between him and Saul? A couple of things. Now, technically, David is not alone. We know that his men are somewhere in the region. And we know this because Ahimelech gives David the bread of the presence, and he wants to know if the men of David were ritually clean. The term alone refers to the fact that David is not going with a royal contingent bearing the standard of the king. And sensing that David might be acting without the king's permission, Ahimelech wants David to be honest with him. But David is fearful, and so he lies. And as the story progresses, we're told that one man who watches this interchange is an Edomite man named Doeg. It is possible that he had been a prisoner of war who had then switched sides and became loyal to Saul in order to survive. So he would be a kind of mercenary who fought for money and not for loyalty. And as this story evolves, because David lied to Ahimelech, this was going to cost the priest their lives. Here's what David could have done. He could have told Ahimelech the truth, and they could have silenced or even killed Doeg, for he was Saul's spies and he was a known evil man. But instead of telling the truth, he put the entire priesthood of Nob at risk, and in the end, David's deception would cost them their lives, as Saul would kill all the priests who helped David. David's panic and his lie would have tragic consequences. And here's the lesson. Unless we learn to be truthful, we cannot trust God fully. Learn to tell the truth and trust in God to protect you. This is always advantageous. But lie while telling yourself it's justified in the present circumstances, this will never bring you to the results that you want. David's first incident while running from Saul is a complete moral failure, one he will deeply grieve later. Now comes the second incident. Once one begins to lie, lies become more frequent and pronounced. David now flees from Nob, and in chapters 21, verse 10 to chapter 22, verse 5, we find David constantly on the move. First, he flees to the Philistines. Let's read 1 Samuel 21, verse 10. And David rose and fled that day from Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath. Those of you who have followed this series will remember that I said that the Philistines had five royal cities, well-fortified encampments. Gaza and Ashkelon were right on the Mediterranean Sea, Ashdod was slightly inland and more to the north, and then Ekron and Gath were closest to the Israelite territories. David flees to Gath, the city which is closest to his hometown of Bethlehem, so it's natural to flee to the closest fortified city that might protect him from Saul. But in this act of desperation, we know two things. First, that it was the Philistines that David had fought with more than any other people group. He is seeking refuge among the enemies of God. And second, Gath was the hometown of Goliath. At one time, David had pronounced victory over Gath in the name of the Lord, and now he was running like a frightened dog to the very city he had once thought defeated in the name of his God. But how does David get into the city? Well, the answer is actually quite easy. In David's time, there was an ancient practice of providing sanctuary for one's adversaries or one's enemies. Since the enemy of my enemy is my friend, under normal conditions, David's presence in that city would have been welcome, for it could only have been thought of as weakening Saul. And David knew that, and that's why he ran there. But again, he's acting out of fear and not out of faith. And because he's already frightened, David now starts to listen to all the rumors surrounding his arrival there. Achish is hearing from his advisors, "Isn't this man the man who has slain us by the tens of thousands?" And so David pretends to be a madman. He commits vandalism against public property by making marks on doors and gates, probably writing incomprehensible graffiti or symbols related to curses, and then lets saliva run down his beard, which was a sign of desecrating his own manhood. One Bible teacher suggested that in those days, insanity was viewed as an affliction from the gods, and therefore it was thought taboo to harm someone who was insane. Perhaps David knew that and was hoping to escape. At any rate, David's humiliating display convinces everyone, this guy has turned nuts. Leave him alone. No danger here. And in humiliation, David leaves the city and hides in the cave of Adullam, which would be halfway between Gath and Bethlehem. And from there, he builds a fighting force of 400 men who were outcasts from Israelite cultures, criminals, people of unpaid debts, and everyone who had a long-standing grudge against someone. They became his standing army. And from there, he moves east to Moab and urges the king of Moab, the country on the eastern side of the Dead Sea, to take in his family, whom David was now afraid for. And then in the middle of lies and humiliation and panic and fear and unwise decision, something happens to David. The prophet Gad, who would later have a huge role in David's life, found him. And 1 Samuel 22 verse 5 records this. The prophet Gad said to David, "Do not remain in the stronghold. Depart and go to the land of Judah." The grammar of that statement is what we might call a categorical prohibition. The wording is as strong as it can be. Thou shalt not stay in the stronghold of the Moabites. If you stay here, you will be breaking the will of God. And in the midst of lies and panic and humiliation, God breaks in and tells him to stop. You are not trusting in God. When we come back, we will see how God turns the corner for David.
Dr. Neufeld really begins to help us see the humanity of David in his weaknesses and his failure to act in faith. But in the midst of such dire circumstances, the same may well have applied to us as well. We too often struggle to trust God in those moments where our faith may be stretched to its limits. Back to the Bible, leading people into a dynamic relationship with God.
We are excited to announce that Back to the Bible has launched a brand new website which offers all of our Bible teaching resources, including the on-air messages of Dr. John Neufeld, news about the ministry, our Bible teaching correspondent courses, an opportunity to receive our bi-monthly magazine Confident Living, and a way to support the ministry of Back to the Bible. With the new website, there is never a reason to miss another Bible teaching message from Dr. John Neufeld. And you can order every program that you hear or complete Bible teaching series on CD. So why not visit backtothebible.in today? That is backtothebible.in. Or for more information, call us at 9492-440070. That is 9492-440070.